I'm talking today to Associate Professor Mark Hugh, who is Head of Allergy, Asthma and Clinical Immunology here at the Alfred Hospital, and also with Professor Michael Abramson, who is Deputy Head of the Department of Epidemiology and Preventive Medicine at Monash Uni. You guys have co-authored, I think it's a perspective for our next issue of the MJA, on what you've called the million patient gap in uncontrolled asthma. How did you arrive at that number?
Well, Kate, that's based predominantly on a previous MJA publication from last year. Mm-hmm. And in that paper, Helen Riddell and other colleagues from Sydney had run a web-based survey of asthmatics. And the survey in its design was meant to be fairly representative of the Australian population. Mm-hmm. And they found that of their surveyed sample, 45% of patients with asthma were uncontrolled. We know there are 2.3 million asthmatics in Australia, 10% of the population, and so that makes it about a million who are uncontrolled, assuming the survey is representative.
And how do you define uncontrolled in this context?
The definition used in that paper, which I think is an appropriate definition, was based on what we call the asthma control test. It's a questionnaire that has been validated many times in many different settings. And about 50%, or just over 50% of the population was well-controlled. About a quarter was poorly controlled, and a quarter were extremely poorly controlled.
Mm. Let's talk about the factors behind why those million people are not controlling their asthma properly. What are the main reasons, do you think?
It's clear that there are patients who have severe symptoms and they don't recognise that as representing poor control, mm-hmm. so they don't use medication, or they over rely on reliever medication, which provides short term relief of the symptoms but doesn't address the underlying airway inflammation,
right.
And therefore they remain at risk of the complications of poor asthma control. There's been quite a bit of research on this question. And it's very clear that some patients don't appreciate the importance of preventive medication.
Isn't the reliever cheaper though? It's easy to get. It's over the counter most of the time. Whereas you've got to go get a script for your preventive. Is that one of the methods you could use to help close this gap, maybe?
Yes, that is undoubtedly a barrier for people receiving appropriate medication. And we note in the editorial there is currently a proposal to make low-dose preventive medication available over-the-counter at pharmacies.
So that was one of the proposals in the draft of the National Asthma Strategy,
mm-hmm.
That is now under review and hopefully will be published reasonably soon this year. But it's just one way, we think, of addressing the current problem, which is that the short-acting relievers are at the front of the shop, and the in fact the more disease-modifying medication are at the back of the shop.
Mm.
And clearly we need to address the access and availability of preventers and make it easier for patients to obtain them in the right circumstances.
What are other factors involved?
Adherence is clearly a very important factor. So even if patients are prescribed appropriate medication, they need to take the medication, they need to use it effectively.
Mm.
The inhaler devices that are on the market now are generally easier to use than some that were used in the past, but people do still need instructions. So there's a very important role there for general practitioners, practice nurses, and also for pharmacists.
You also mentioned, I think, the possibility of a two-in-one medication that delivers both at the same time.
So we have in our editorial mentioned the option of combining relievers and preventers in mm-hmm. the same inhaler. For moderate to severe asthma, that is already available in the form of inhaled corticosteroid preventers with long-acting beta agonists. And there is a large body of evidence which shows that it's extremely good at controlling asthma in that population. There are also some, I would put it, preliminary studies in milder asthmatics where a short-acting reliever with a low dose of inhaled corticosteroid controls asthma symptoms. That's something that conceptually would improve adherence, we think, because if patients are taking that inhaler for its reliever purpose, and to be frank, that is generally why patients take the inhalers, they also get an accompanying dose of inhaled corticosteroid. So that's an attractive option for the future as a systems approach to encouraging adherence.
Are GPs getting enough education in this? Are they aware enough of this gap and whether or not they can do anything about it?
Well, there's a lot of resources out there. The National Asthma Campaign has been running for 25 years now.
Yep.
They've developed some very useful resources on adherence. There have been a series of initiatives, 3+ visits, the cycle of care and so on, which have been rolled out. It's a little disappointing that some of the earlier measures, like written asthma action plans, appear to have plateaued and are now less widely used than they were perhaps 10 years ago. I'm sure that we could all do more, and there are other health professionals in this space, particularly practice nurses and pharmacists, and I guess we'd encourage our colleagues in general practice to work with them.
I guess some GPs would say you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him suck on the inhaler. How do we lift patients' awareness? How do we get them to be more adherent? Obviously, we make it easier for them with some of these suggestions you've made. Are there other educative things we could be doing?
The thrust of guidelines have been, in general, not only to inform delivery of healthcare, but also to promote patient education. General practitioners are clearly under many time pressures.
Yeah.
And it may be actually very challenging to perform this in the current climate. And there is a recent Grattan Institute report which speaks about the delivery of primary care,
yeah,
not just about asthma, and it points to the fact that a lot of primary care clearly does not achieve its intended objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an area that clearly needs more attention. I don't think there are any quick fix solutions, but I think it does need more attention. We hope the new National Asthma Strategy will provide a platform to address these issues. In fact, there are a couple of other things perhaps to talk about. One of the other suggestions in the draft of the National Asthma Strategy was to look at credentialing asthma educators in a similar way to credential diabetes mm-hmm. educators, clearly not to replace general practice, but to work in tandem with general practitioners and allow some synergies between the GP and the educator. We also think that it may be useful to try and increase the participation of pharmacists in education, and pharmacists are in a unique position where they are actually dispensing medication, including relievers.
Yeah.
They're in a position to detect and address high reliever use without the use of inhaled corticosteroids.
Mm-hmm.
There are mechanisms out in the community where pharmacies can detect high use of other medications like opioids or pseudoephedrine. And there is, you know, there would be a very good reason in this case to develop programs which could detect high reliever use and attempt to steer these patients into better care. Based on Helen Riddell's MJA survey last year, only about 10% of patients with asthma have seen a specialist in the prior 12 months. And given the degree of poor control, that's only a very small fraction of the patients who have poor control. We believe that GPs should do their best to manage the patients, but if they're experiencing difficulty to refer patients on for specialist care, a very small proportion of patients, of those who actually do need specialist care, need even more intensive assessment, perhaps 1% of the entire total asthma population.
Right.
And that's perhaps something that does not apply to the majority of the patients with poorly controlled asthma, but is certainly necessary for the extremely unwell or difficult to manage patient.
Just one other point that I would make relates to the triggers for asthma. So These are something that should be assessed in every patient, and they include things like cigarette smoking. We've found in previous research people with asthma smoke at much the same rate as the community at large, and clearly cigarette smoking is a trigger for asthma, but also exposes them to the risk of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease in the future. And a particular interest of mine has been in occupational exposure. So there are some very well recognised causes of occupational asthma, but in addition there are many jobs that expose people to non-specific triggers. I mean, for example, people who work in the food industry often need to enter cool rooms. Well, cold air is a very well recognised trigger for asthma. So I know that time is limited in general practice consultations, but over the course of managing somebody with a chronic disease, I just encourage people to ask their patients about their work and specifically search for things that could be making the asthma worse.
Thank you both for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.